verses will be 24 and 25. Jonathan, thank you for doing such an awesome job of getting our minds wrapped around in Matthew, this King Jesus concept. Jesus is the one true King. And how do we make him the king of our lives? And because at the end of the day, he's truly the king, regardless if you're on his side or you're his opponent. So I'm going to kind of try to paint a picture for you here real quick. And this is going to be kind of tough for me because, it's just once I read through this, this was tough. So bear with me, and I'm going to try to paint a picture for you right now. In 1986, up on a little small rolling hill stood a two-story big white house. In front of this house, there was two enormous, beautiful magnolia trees. You looked outside the house and you saw this beautiful field. It was near a river. And you had three people that lived at this house. And you had a mother, and at this time she was cleaning the house. And you had a grandfather who was in his mid-50s who was tilling the land and working on the garden. He had corn and watermelons and tomatoes and everything you could imagine, just a beautiful garden. And a little boy, about 3 years old, just playing with his little red wagon. And for you young people, that was all we had back in the day. Well, I had a tennis ball, too. And I had a little tennis ball, and I made the best decision. It was the funnest time in life. That was just what the little red wagon was for. And so this family of three lived there. So you have the mother cleaning. You have the grandfather doing the soil. And you had this little boy with not a worry in the world. A couple days prior, on this property, a construction crew came to work on an older septic tank. This big old round thing that you stick in the ground, for those of you who don't know, most of you do. And these things used to come with these 350-pound solid cement lids. Well, the mother was doing her duties, and she was just going through her chores list that she normally does on a normal day and cleaning the house. And she got done with her last dish, and she started to wipe her hands, and she said, "I just haven't seen my son in a while." So this mother exited out the side of the house and yelled down to the grandfather, "Have you seen my little varmint? Where's he at?" And, "I don't know. I've been down here in the garden." "Okay, I'll look for him." Son, where are you at?" "Nothing." "Son, where are you at?" Well, the grandfather started listening to this, and he's like, he's not responding. Where could he be? So he gazed from the garden up to the home, and something was out of place. The lid of this septic tank was propped at one point, and it had fallen flat. So out of fear, to make sure that this wasn't something that could have been drastic, he immediately dropped what he was doing and made haste closer to the house where the septic tank was at. And as he approached with great fear. All he saw was a little foot being crushed. He called for the mother. The mother came. He knelt to the ground and grabbed the sides of this 350-pound cement lid. Not one attempt, not two attempts, not three attempts, not even struggling, barely, but out of adrenaline gripped this thing and with one motion picked it and, like Samson, tossed it. Knelt to the ground, reached down into the tank, grabbed the baby boy's leg, and pulled him up. He was blue and lifeless. 1986. The mother runs in and calls 911. The grandfather is putting him in the car. They're calling the ambulance, telling them what hospital they're going to. They are telling them to meet them in transit. They don't have time. He's been there for no telling how long. But he's lifeless, he's blue, and he's broken. They take off, they're in transit, they're on the hospital, they meet the ambulance. The ambulance takes the little boy, puts him in the ambulance, and doing all they can do to get to the hospital. No life in this child. right before they get him into, as they pull into the hospital, they get a faint, dim beat to give a little bit of hope. They rush him into the hospital. The mother and the grandfather are following this child. But they have to cut him off at a certain point and saying, we've got to take care of this. It's going to be okay. The mother's in frantic. The grandfather, you could read it all over his face. He's worried. Doesn't look like this is going to be a very good situation. With all the adrenaline flowing in their systems, they had to sit and wait. Some time had passed. And, you know, you got the whole family coming down to the hospital. You got friends of the family, you got aunts and uncles, you got cousins. But the doctor, after a couple hours, comes to speak with the mother, and everyone follows the mother to hear this conversation. The doctor says, this is a very tough situation. The boy is in critical condition. The antibiotics needed to treat your son aren't available anywhere in the entire U.S. They will have to be flown in from the United Kingdom. And I'm not sure if we got enough time. Now remember, this is 1986. We've had a lot of advancements. There's some things that can get over here in hours. But nothing like today in 1986. The mother says, do whatever it takes. But the doctor was honest with her and had explained to her, even if the antibiotics got here, the critical time the boy had been lifeless, the fact he had swallowed his toxins and numerous germs, every moment without the medications needed to fight the multiple viruses had, the boy may not ever be the same. His immune system had been harshly damaged. We don't know the extent of the brain damage. He may not walk normal from the septic lid crushing his ankle. And I'm saying this all to you because we will petition to get the medicines, but they may not get here in time. The family, in complete shock, have to sit and wait with very little hope. In the waiting room, a code blue was called. This grabs the attention of all who were waiting. The boy had flatlined again. The mother and grandfather were escorted out of the room, again in panic. The doctors and nurses are shooting the child full of medications to revive him. The doctors are shocking his chest to get a heart, to hopefully provide a heartbeat. This process goes on for what seems like eternity, but it was only 10 minutes, and the doctor finally left the room. We were able to revive him. He is strong. He's a fighter. But he may not be able to withstand another episode. In my medical opinion, he asked the family to say goodbye. Without the antibiotics, this boy didn't have a chance. The time was going to take for him to be flown, and the doctor had to be honest with his decisions and prepare the family for the loss. Lost and hopeless, the mother left the room to go tell the rest of the family what she has been told. The grandfather walked into the room, grabbed the young boy's hand. You could hear crying from the waiting room. Hope was lost. Matthew 16, 24 and 25. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But for whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. In society, we have made it all about ourselves. The most important object in our lives is ourselves. Is what society's telling us is okay. And we're afraid of certain words. We're afraid of words like vulnerability, submission, surrender. These things take away our control. These things take away our power. This doesn't allow me to live the way I want to live. I want it my way. No one's going to tell me how I'm going to live. It's my life, no one else's. I will live it the way I want. And we've all been here. Even when we're trying our hardest, we've all kind of resort sometimes to wanting to take that control back. We long to be the chiefs of our lives. I can make things happen. I can fix it. I don't need anyone to help me. I got this. How is that working for you? You see, Jesus is constantly inviting us to his kingdom. He has invited us to join at this great banquet. He has invited us to be part of the greatest fellowship of all time, of those of old and the current ones who are serving him. He's invited us to live in his kingdom forever. The cost of admission for this all-inclusive package of awesomeness for all of eternity is to deny yourself, take your life, and follow the Lord. Saul on the road to Damascus found himself in a very unique situation. He asked the chief priest to make haste towards Damascus because he was hunting down disciples of Christ. And as he was making his journey, what once was sight became lost. And I'm sure, of course, the Bible goes right into what was next, but let's take a moment of what that looks like. He's walking. He's going forward. He's going through the desert. He's maybe got a couple of people with him, and he's just got this zeal about him to go do his duty, and all of a sudden, he has no sight. He can't see. He's probably disoriented and confused, and he's got his hands out just trying to figure out what is going on with me, what is going on with me. You know, and he doesn't know what to do. He's vulnerable. And he hears a voice like no other, like he's never heard before. Saul, why are you persecuting me? And some of the words that, one word that really just sums up what happens for the rest of his life comes next. Lord, submission. You see, it's no longer about him. You know, he's not seeking out those who love the Lord and was following him to hurt them. It was all about getting to them to see him, to see the king, and that requires surrender. Looking down at this baby boy, the grandfather fell to his knees. Lord, I have known you all my life, but I really haven't. I've been doing it my way, not yours. So I don't think you will hear this prayer, but you have the power to save him, heal him, make him alive again. It may not be the right thing to do to put a contingency on this, but I'm asking you, if you'd save my baby boy, my grandson, I will serve you all the days of my life. I give my life to you, O Lord. Please save my boy. You see, these are the types of people that Jonathan told us about in the Beatitudes that were seeking and hurting and thirsty and hungry and lost and broken and shattered and desperate. And this grandfather, who thought he knew the Lord at 54 years old, was honest and vulnerable and said, I know who you are. But I'm willing to give my life to you. See, these are the ones that are missing. These are the ones that are missing something, and they need a savior, and they need a king. Ahead of schedule, the antibiotics arrived within 36 hours. Remember, the boy that had been without oxygen to the brain for some time, and he had drowned in this wastewater filled with toxins, and infections started to form. He had died twice, and with the knowledge of the doctors, said he wouldn't be normal. He may not grow correctly. He could be alive, but lifeless. Lord, all to thee I surrender. I'm no longer the ruler of my kingdom, but a servant, if you allow me, in yours. Place the surrender. The place of surrender is really just a magical place, if you let it. There is something that speaks supernatural, or a higher power, majestic, if you will, that a higher power is in charge. There's a sense of somebody who's, like my personality, I'm extremely, like, trying to always be in control. And the moments I've given up and surrendered, there's a peace about it. The relief I don't have to control the universe, control every aspect of my life. Ask Paul when you get there what it was like feeling this, the surrendering to Jesus. Was it worth it? The grandson grew up. He made his fair share of mistakes in life. He will never claim he was perfect. He struggles daily with fleshly desires. And at times he tries to make his way back to his own throne from building his own kingdom. But because of one man's surrender, Paul, through Christ, changed the world of Christianity. Because of one man's surrender, all the way in his mid-50s in a local hospital, on his knees with his dying grandchild, hand in his hand, changed many lives as well. He gave his abundance to the church. He helped student preachers eat and borrow his car to drive to places to preach. He worked on the local church camp board, fixing electrical for many years. He saw the needs of many and made those needs go away. He visited the sick, the shut-in. He took the Lord's Supper to those that missed. He spoke to all that came into contact about Jesus and was never scared to tell them, to invite them to church, or never was afraid to be persecuted for believing in his King. I'm sure my wife and my kids and my family and my friends are glad my grandfather prayed that prayer. He submitted to the King. Not my life, but I'm here to serve. And now I have an opportunity, and I pray it doesn't come to anything remotely near that. That I will find it as a choice, and before I'm forced to my knee on Judgment Day, to surrender to that King. God is in control, and God has the power to change Paul's heart, my grandfather's heart. He would have been 84 years old today. But he surrendered. After talking to him, he said he surrendered. Yes, he wanted me to live, but he knew it was time. That his life was given up for the Lord's life and his work. I believe the King was involved. And I want the King to be involved. Stop letting your kingdom get in the way of the one true kingdom. Jesus calls us daily to join him, but you have the choice to make him your King. Tonight I'm asking you, will you surrender your life for a better one, an eternal one, a life with King Jesus? If there's anyone here who hasn't got to that point, or has and forgot what it was like, I beg you. We love you. We want you to go to heaven more than you know. And yes, although a little sad and lonely when I first got here, and finding an awesome wife and having awesome children, I don't think my wife would get mad at me if I said that strengthening my relationship with the Lord was the best thing that ever happened to me coming here. You see, I came here to get plugged in somewhere where I could be used and I can, and to find a better, to be vulnerable. My biggest fear is letting somebody in and taking over control. But between doing the men's group and doing the discipleship group and being with you all, I'm willing to surrender. Tonight, it may not be this moment, and I hope you never get into a situation like my grandfather did, and I pray you don't want to get in a situation like Paul did, but sometimes it takes that to soften up that heart. But I know most of you, and you got a heart already that's softened. We just sometimes let that throne look too pretty for us wanting to sit on it versus letting the one who needs to be on it rule. Come tonight if you have a need. We'll embrace you. We'll love you. And God has already forgiven you before you even got up here. Come join us as we stand and sing.